Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life.
Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Second Wednesday Books and Authors Show with Books Forward. You know, we've been working with them for years, and they really connect us with some of the best authors on the planet. And today we get to go and be a little swampy. We're going to Louisiana to play in the bayous, because you never know what's in the bayou or under, like what's under that water. And you know, it's always that brownish or greenish water, and you're always like, what's in there, man? We know there's gators sometimes, and you never know. And so we're going to talk about that today. We have author Jennifer Moorhead joining us with her brand new debut thriller. It is called Broken Bayou. It comes out July 1st. So I encourage you to pre-order it. Go to Amazon or go to jennifermoorhead.com. And that's M-O-O-R-head.com. No E on there. So welcome, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Did you drop that E from your name in the swamp?
It's in the bayou.
It's in the bayou. I know. I've had Blue Bayou stuck in my head all day long, knowing that you're coming on.
Of course.
So now we're going to change the song to Broken Bayou.
Well, I like that. We can revamp it a little bit. Make it work.
Why not? Why not?
Bayou's not so blue, but
Yeah, no, not so blue. A lot of times it's that dark brown. And the green part I was talking about is normally that little swamp grass and, you know, the little vegetation, the swamp lilies and all that good stuff. So
there's all kinds of good stuff in there.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I have a lot in my backyard, so I see it a lot.
Oh, and the cypress knees. And I saw your video showing everyone. And when you go to the website, everyone go on the blog and go have a look, you know, because you're showing people kind of the terrain that inspired. I was going to say the terrain sounds firm, but it's not.
Yeah, no.
There's no terra firma for you.
Yeah, parts of it, because we do have that Louisiana clay up here, but not all of it, for sure.
So let's talk a little bit about your start in writing and then going into crime and fiction and everything, because I was reading that you actually have a background in film, right?
Well, a little bit. And that is more of a hobby, but it is something I love to do. And it's a passion of mine. And I've written a few indie short films, but actually those happened after I had started writing novels. So Broken Bayou is actually the fourth novel I've written. Other three are tucked away and probably will not see the light of day. And that's fine. I've got one that's so old, I joke it's on floppy disks, and I'll have to see as drink coasters. I mean, that one's never coming out to play. But so Broken Bayou, although it's my debut, it's not my first book.
Okay. Okay. So what led you there to even write? Are they all crime and mystery?
Well, the books, yes, all mystery for sure. The last two have really been more crime. You're talking about the novels?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the book I wrote before this, it did go out on submission to publishers. It did not sell, which happens. I mean, that's part of the process. And it was more like this one, like set in Louisiana, a little bit darker, kind of creepy setting. And
nice.
While it was out on, all the things I love. And while it was out on submission to editors, I was going crazy. And so that's when I kind of started playing around with indie short films, which is sort of the flip side to my coin, which is the comedy side. I like dark comedy as well. Mm-hmm. I think crime and comedy kind of works.
Yeah.
So that gave me a good outlet to have a little fun, explore a different genre. And we have a local film festival here in Shreveport called Louisiana Film Prize. And I've been going to it for, 10 years. And I just thought, I'm going to try to get a movie in that. And I have a friend who directed and we did it. So it was great.
Cool.
It was a really little side hustle.
Well, it's interesting to do, because one has the visuals, one you have to inspire the visuals. Right. So either help each other in writing?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, working on those short films, I got to sit behind a screen and watch a scene being played out in front of me, and seeing the parameters and like how it's set up and how it's lit and how everything moves in that moment gave me such a visual in my writing. And so when I started this book, you know, I see my scenes as if I'm looking through a camera and I'm looking into a different world. And I kind of see like, where's everything placed and what's happening, but I get to add, you know, what it smells like, what it tastes like, what it feels like. And so setting is just, oh my gosh, it's my favorite thing in the world. I love it. Love it.
Yeah. And crime with a bayou. I mean, I remember the first time I went kayaking in this country, my mom and I were, it was in a bayou in Bayou Rapids near Alexandria. And, you know, there were like, I remember the guy that took us out, he's like, don't bump into the trees. That's where the snakes are. And the first thing Nancy does, my mom was bump into the trees and he's all detour. And I'm like, a snake's going to get you. But there were frogs jumping on me. There were birds. I mean, it was, and being in the middle of the bayou was a whole other experience from being on the banks. You know, you're seeing everything out. Then you really know. And then my second experience was, yeah, there was a water moccasin. So like, anyway, you know, so those, the, but I'm kind of attracted to that, you know, like, I don't know. It's weird that I want in the bayou.
I just want to live it. I want to experience it. I'm with you. And I mean, just yesterday, I was coming home and there was a giant snake right in the middle of the road and it had come out of the cypress tree and there was a nest up in the cypress tree.
Oh, he was trying to get.
You know, I walk there every day and I'm thinking if that thing had fallen on me, there would be like, absolutely. That's an experience I don't need to have. I can pretend.
Yeah, but
I
you can write about it.
Yeah, exactly. So every moment where I live kind of gives me the opportunity to learn a little something about
get this. A little creeped out, you know, because it is, I'm attracted to the creepy. So let's give everyone an overview of Broken Bayou again, everyone. It comes out July 1st and that's the height of swampy. Like hot, swampy. You talked about there's a swamp smell.
Oh, I mean, and it's something. And that's when the book takes place. It was in the summer. And so the climate is its own little character as well. And for people who haven't been in South Louisiana in the summer, it is something to behold. I mean,
South Louisiana. Like, so when I was thinking, I know like Lake Charles really well. There's Lafayette, New Orleans, Baton Rouge. Like where in that?
This is a made-up town that is near St. Francisville.
Okay.
So that's a little northeast of Baton Rouge.
Okay.
And this town does not exist. I just wanted it next to St. Francisville because it is pretty much the opposite of St. Francisville. St. Francisville is very quaint and it has the tourism and it's, you know, it's got reasons to draw people in, and Broken Bayou is just broken and doesn't have any of that. And so I wanted it to be this little no-name town in the middle of this swampy area. And I love the summer heat because it just adds another layer of tension and, you know, makes your characters uncomfortable. So whatever makes your characters uncomfortable, throw it at them.
Oh, mosquitoes too. I mean, that's your national bird. As you know, I remember the first time really hanging out in Louisiana was in Southwest Louisiana, and we went to Cameron Prairie National Wildlife Refuge, and there's like a hole, and we get out and I'm filming these alligators and everything, and I'm getting dive bombed by mosquitoes, but I did it. And you know, and I'm going, how long would a body, like, honestly, how long does a body last in a bayou? So anyway, go to the body part, but don't give away everything. Go to the body part.
So I actually did some research with a forensic pathologist here at the North Louisiana Crime Lab. And he and I would talk and he would tell me stories. I would say, okay, what if, you know, there was a body discovered, you know, in a bayou and in summer, like, tell me what's left. I mean, this is how gruesome I get. I'm like, just tell me everything. Like, what would have to happen to keep this from disintegrating, to keep clothes preserved, to keep, like, what's the timeline? So we would go through timelines and he would tell me stories of things they have found that I would have to say, okay, stop, wait a minute. Just going to need a minute here. I mean, when you hear the real stories, it's crazy how much your made up story isn't that crazy?
Wow.
It's like, oh, actually this happens a lot. And he would tell me the stories of things they had found, and really how you can identify through, you know, DNA or bone sampling, and kind of what have to be with the body in order to get that body identified.
Do the gators eat the bodies?
They do. But
they don't really chew. Like crocodiles don't chew. They just kind of slam down. And I've watched gators eat turtles, and it's really this crunch of them swallowing, and it's hitting their teeth at the same time.
And then it's just gone.
And you can hear it. And you can hear, I mean, the crunch is a whole other.
Yeah.
You know, so I was always wondering about that, the force of their jaws and humans, you know. This is a great conversation. I am
loving this.
Well,
you
I
know,
love
the
it.
Gators go in the death roll. So they grab you and they drag you under and drown you. So then they can put you away for a while for when they're ready for you.
In their larder.
Yes. So, you know, we've seen, we have a lot of gators in our lake, just on the other side of this camera. And I've seen a lot of gators get caught. I've seen, you know, and so I've kind of learned like how their movements are and what they do. Oh my gosh. I mean, and they are, even the smaller ones are very strong.
Don't mess with them. They are. When they talk about people walking their chihuahuas and there went the chihuahua, oh, that's nothing.
Yeah. No.
Don't walk your chihuahuas next to gators.
Don't do it. Don't go near a lake in Louisiana, Florida, whatever.
No, I have and I do, but because I'm fascinated by them. But then you know that in a split second they can come after you. But so did gators get in broken by? You got to go back to the bodies. Okay, like what?
No.
Okay, no.
I kept the gators out of broken by you because I kind of needed my bodies. So I didn't want gators getting
them. So provide the setting. We basically get, there's a bayou, it's broken. Yes. So tell us like an overview, and so we don't,
So it's,
but don't give it away.
No, I'm not. And this is just sort of my tagline. And it is, it's about a troubled child psychologist. Her name is Dr. Willa Waters. And she returns to this small Louisiana town in order to protect secrets, and winds up having to protect her life. So she returns. This town is a place she visited as a child. They would go every summer. Her mom and her sister and her would go down to South Louisiana and see her great aunts, who had this, you know, big house, and they would stay with them. And she returns to this house because she has learned some of her mother's things are in the attic and she needs to go get them. And there's something in particular she really wants to get her hands on. She doesn't want anyone else to find it. And so while she's in this town, she discovers some other things are happening that she didn't know about. And the town itself is just, you know, it's one yellow light. Stores are boarded up. It's just limping along, and it is not really the town she remembers as a kid. This is a very different experience for her. But while she's here, she becomes entangled in a police investigation of bodies that are being found.
And small town settings are perfect. The gossip, the drama, getting to everyone's details. I mean,
everybody's talking. And, you know, there's a lot of fun in that as a writer, because I don't plot a lot of things out when I start my drafts. And so it's really fun for me to sort of figure out what's happening through my characters. And I'll just start the scene and they're talking and I'm like, well, what are they talking about? And then I'm like, that's kind of interesting. And so it's almost like you're just sitting there gossiping with this character, and you sort of learn, you know, what's happening. And so it was really fun in a small town to do that.
So were there bodies in the bayou?
Yes.
Are you allowed to tell us? Oh.
Yes. And it'll be on the flap jacket too. So yeah, there were actually barrels that were found, and you can see my little barrel hidden on my, my cover, almost hidden.
Barrels.
But barrels, 55 gallon drum barrels.
And this is a true story. I was reading on your blog. This is an actual true crime story that inspired this, right?
Yes.
Which is freaky, which is always, well, yeah.
It's sort of a combination of true crime. The first true crime was the missing school teacher. Yeah, she left New Orleans. It was a newspaper article I read. They thought her car went in the bayou, so they send in divers to try to find it. And what's really interesting, it took a couple of months. I mean, the bayous are so deep and so dark.
And people are diving in them, diving in the bayous.
Yes, they come over. They got a dive team from.
I know you're not a dude, but dude.
They go. They have their wetsuits on, their headlamps. They go into the bayou and they start looking for stuff. Well, it turns out they actually did find the teacher. Unfortunately, she had had an accident. She was still in her car. But the interesting part of the story was all of the other things they found in the bayou. And one of the local sheriffs said, bayous make the best dumping grounds. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to know what else is in a bayou. Yeah. And so I thought, well, maybe that's the real story. Like, you think the story is the missing person, but maybe there's another story in there. That's the real story. And so I followed that.
That's what happens in the desert. You know, we lived out in the desert there, and it's like, you know, Nevada, look at Lake Mead has lost all this water, and they're finding all kinds of stuff in Lake Mead.
They found barrels.
Really?
With bodies in them.
In Lake Mead?
Yeah.
So barrels are the thing.
I didn't know. Like, that happened years after I wrote the book. I mean, the book was done, and I saw that news article and I thought, life is imitating art. And that's not the only place. That happened in Malibu as well.
Malibu,
California, barrel washed with a body in it.
When we lived in Mexico, we would see barrels floating and we always thought it was drugs in the
probably,
ocean. We lived right on the coast. And now I'm like,
yeah, it could be, but this one was not. No, the Malibu one was the most recent. I think I've got three news articles where barrels have been found.
And now that people are listening to this, they know how to get rid of a body, but it will be found later and preserved.
Yeah, right, right.
Preserved like for the gators.
My Google search, not good.
I know. I love that about writers. It's like, and I love writers like you coming on shows because it's like, you can go anywhere. It's like, why not? Like, why not? Like, how do we kill someone? You know, the barrel thing when we were in Louisiana, a couple years back, we went to DeRidder. And DeRidder is a tiny little town, very historic and charming, but they have a Gothic jail.
Oh my gosh!
No, you got to go. It's supposed to be haunted, right? And at the time, they had like the Chamber of Commerce or Visitor Bureau next to it, and I mean, it's a Gothic jail, but on the inside, it's like going up a lighthouse. It like has a circular staircase, and they have, and this is where it really freaked me out because they had, and all, everything was kind of, you know, they just started to open it up to the public on Halloween and stuff.
Yeah.
But there was like the room downstairs where the family lived, and there was like a cot for the baby. And I'm like, you're raising your baby in a jail. That's freaky.
Okay.
So we go in and they're talking about all these ghost stories, but they had a town from the top to represent a hanging that took place with two men. And it was two young guys robbed a cab driver, and the cab driver fought back. So they murdered him and they pushed the cab with the guy in it. Guess what? In a little bayou swampy area. Mm-hmm. And they got caught because it wasn't, you know, listen, the summertime and stuff, when the water goes down, things start to pop out, like in your story, you know, and when the water goes down, it's a good time. And anyway, they got caught and they got hanged in this prison. And this is way back when. And the town people came out to watch them being taken out of the jail on stretch. Like, I mean, back in the day, we used to go to hangings, as hangings were a form of like, we're hanging people, let's go have a picnic. Seriously,
right, like, okay,
around
kid,
the world.
Get in the car. Not really a car, I guess.
Yeah, come on, let's have some egg salad while we watch someone getting hanged. I mean, if it's South Louisiana, it could be boudin balls. Who knows?
Right, of course it is.
Boudins and hangings. you know.
Look, I like this combo. Like, okay, that's just a fun Saturday.
Would you go to a hanging?
No.
You wouldn't?
No.
That's got to be something you can't unlive in your head. Like,
no, exactly. Like, you can't, a made up scene, I can forget. Something,
but
you know,
real,
mm-mm, you don't forget that.
No, you that's don't. And, but this place level. Is freaky. And I felt something touch my head.
No,
like
I don't
a
like
hand
that.
On my head when I walked up. And the women were in this prison, and they put the women in a cage in the middle of the room because the women would go and show themselves out windows. And so they stopped traffic. And so they had to put the women in like a cage. Like, it's freaky, but it was a lobby dot jail because they had toilets. And that was an unknown thing and an unusual. You need to go there and write about this.
Of South Louisiana to me. Like, that's just a little gold nugget.
Well, I think it's part of the Myths and Legends Trail, like the Myths and Legends Byway or something.
Yeah.
And I think Louisiana, I don't know, like, to me, and Northern Florida, Mississippi, the swampy area of this country provides the best stories ever.
I agree. I think
there's a mysticism too, not just crime, but there's this, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it is. It's so intriguing. It's just, and those are the things I love the most. Like the stories behind the story, behind the story. Like, I love going back and really digging into the past and, you know, all of it, whether it's haunted or not. I mean, my books are not speculative fiction, which means, you know, there are no ghosts in it, but it's still kind of has that undertone because
that
it's
vibe.
Louisiana, and you know, half the places I went to as a kid were haunted. So I'm like, you know, something was always haunted. You know, there was just always an
cool.
Old building, and you know, so I love it.
Just being in the cypress trees. I mean, that's a whole other,
you know, I love cypress trees, and I love them in the fall. They turn red. They're beautiful, beautiful. And just their roots, and just if you have never seen a cypress knee, which I'm trying to think, you know, if it was in this book or the
you
one.
You can get hurt. You can get hurt on those things, man.
Yes. And yes, you can. And I think I had an editor who wasn't real sure. She was like, a cypress knee? Like, what is this? There was this little side note. Like, I don't quite understand what you're talking about. And so I'd send her a picture. I'm like, no, this is it. Like, this is
their
the real
knees.
Thing. Yeah.
And at Christmas time, people paint them into like Santa Clauses.
Oh, listen, I wish I had one in here with me. My grandmother did that.
Oh,
and
wow.
I have a lot of cypress knee Santas that come out.
Cypress Santas, yes.
Cypress Santas.
Now, we were in a swamp area. I think it was Alabama backwoodsy, and there was cypress. And I think it was a Tupelo honey cypress. Like, you could smell honey. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've never seen.
And I looked, and I was looking it up, and it was like, it's Tupelo honey. And there's a certain time of year, and that's where the Tupelo honey comes from. Like, I don't, maybe it was Mississippi now. Now, I don't know, but is it Tennessee that has Tupelo? I don't know, but there's, I don't know where we were. We were in a swamp. There's a swamp detour we were in.
Right.
I could smell this. It smells like orange blossoms.
Oh, how wonderful.
And so it was this aromatic, like jasmine, orange blossom, honey. Like, you can't, that kind of scent is completely opposite to your swamp.
Oh my gosh, I wish.
You know, so it's.
No, not in Broken Bayou. It does not smell like honey, orange blossom.
Now, you picking a lady who is a child psychologist, that adds another layer of crazy. Am I allowed to say that? Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
And I love every second of it. And I've always been fascinated with the psychology behind people's actions and why they do things. And I thought, well, I want to get into the head of someone who studies it and needs to study herself as well.
Wow.
So I had so much fun with her, like, just really getting to know her. I spent hours talking to a clinical child psychologist, a woman who helped me kind of dive into that world. And I would just listen to the language that she used. And it just, it was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And so I thought, yeah, this is going to be fun. She's going to be
dinner conversation with you must be fun. I mean, you're sitting there like, and do you know what they found in this bayou? You know, the research is so, how do you enjoy the research as much as actually writing the narrative?
I do. I love research. And, you know, of course, there's some research that can get tedious. But when I get to talk to people about their profession, that to me is fascinating and so much fun. I have a guy who was helping me with crime scenes, and he worked a lot of serial killers in South Louisiana, which, guess what? There's a lot. There's a lot that come from West Feliciana Parish. I mean, who knew? So it was really interesting. I would just sit there and ask him to tell me a story, a real story. He'd just say, walk me through this crime scene. He'd say, all right. We got this guy, you know, he was talking about the Baton Rouge serial killer. He was killing co-eds at LSU back in the day. And, you know, and so he would kind of walk me through, you know, how they caught him, what happened. And I was just like, this is unbelievable. Like everything he would tell me, he would say, now this is not going to sound true, but this is what happened. And I said, if I write that, people are going to say, no way. That can't have happened. And I'm like, the truth is stranger than fiction.
Right. And there's something going on about all the campuses having some weird stuff. Serial killers are attracted to campuses.
Well, and it's wild. I'm like, what? I mean, I haven't gone down that path to divert to that specific thing, but it's crazy. And of course it's frightening. I mean, as somebody who has two daughters on a college campus, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like,
no. Yeah.
I don't go there. Cause I'm like,
well, what led you to write crime? What was it about? I mean, the dark comedy, I get it, in the dark, like there's something about that, but I mean, were you always interested in that kind of thing as, you know, a kid, as, you know, your youth? You know,
I read a ton of Stephen King and Dean Koontz. Like they started me on my journey. I've always loved to read. I was the weird kid who couldn't wait for the summer reading list. Like people would be going, oh my gosh, we've got to read The Good Earth. I'm like, Good Earth, great.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. Moby Dick, I'm in. You know, like I loved books. I loved to read. Then as I got older and I got into high school, I found Stephen King and Dean Koontz. And I just was like, oh, this is next level. I loved it. It's what I love to read. And I wanted to write a story that I would want to read. So that to me is interesting. I do love true crime shows. I like true crime podcasts. And I don't really know, you know, why. I'm like, it's just,
I think there's something empowering about it, because there's always a light to the dark, right? So there's always that balance.
Right. And maybe it does give you a little bit of control. So, you know, I'm a quasi-reformed control freak, I guess. But I still, with my stories, I can still control it so that I know where the ending is going. You know, and it's kind of nice. Right. It's not the complete unknown. Like I know I can button it up at the end, and there's some satisfaction in that, knowing that.
Man, it's cool. I don't know. It's always intriguing, because I think it goes back to the psychological side of it, of why people did this and how did they think it out? Like, did they think it out, or did it start with an emotional driver that something just sparked, like, that's it, I've had it.
Exactly. I mean,
crazy.
I have read the book Mindhunter twice. I love Mindhunter. I didn't love the TV show as much, but the book, it takes you into the mind of a serial killer. And he interviewed, oh my gosh, I don't know how many serial killers. And it is fascinating. And he was sort of on that psychological journey to figure out, you know, is this nature or nurture? Is it both? Is it like, what is that perfect storm that creates a monster? And I just found it fascinating. And I read it before writing this book, and I read it again as I was writing this book, because I just loved that deep dive into what it takes.
You know? So are you writing more?
I am. Cool. I am currently working on a first draft to a companion book to Broken Bayou. So it won't be a sequel. I'm taking a character from Broken Bayou, and I'm going to explore that story. And so I don't really want to tell you which character yet, but it's just getting fleshed out. I'm doing some research in the Kisatchie National Forest.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I've been going down there, and I'm doing a little research down there because I think it'll be set in that area.
Ooh.
And it's been a lot of fun.
I love Kisatchie National Forest. They've got wild piggies out there. Well, hogs.
Oh my God. We have a lot of wild hogs up here too. Yeah.
I know people, they're supposed to be a no-no, but I saw babies and they were cute. And I slid on my butt and we got caught in a rainstorm, summer storm, like kaboom. Oh my.
Yeah.
Oh my. But it was quite refreshing. But Kisatchie has some, it has some crazy vibes, mm-hmm. like certain areas, you know, for those who haven't been there, Kisatchie's the only national forest in the state of Louisiana. And it's beautiful in the spring with azaleas. And then it has its swampy parts. And there's sometimes you're walking around going, there's the cave. There's a cave where the Native Americans, I think it's called Wolf's Den or something. I'll have to look it up. Yeah. But there's so much history from like Native American history to like the Louisiana maneuvers when they were driving tanks through there and teaching all the military. There's
a lot of, and I've spoken with a woman down there who was telling me how it even came to be a national forest.
Carolyn Dorman. Yeah. Yeah. Have you been to Briarwood?
No, but I want to go.
You must go.
I mean, you know,
they have a writer's cabin. No, check it out.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a reserve and it has her, you know, it's a monument to her and everything. Yeah. And it's her garden, right? And so she was a teacher and everybody thought she was nuts. So, you know, anyway. You need to go. You need to go because they have her cabin where she worked and drew all of her pictures and everything. But they have the grandpappy tree. And then they have a little swampy area, and the writer's cabin is around the swampy bend. And there's a cabin where it is like a writer's retreat cabin. So I'm just saying.
Oh, I'm in. Look, I'll see you later. No.
All right.
I'm going right now.
It's awesome. That's awesome. But I'm excited. So everyone, again, this is out. Broken Bayou by Jennifer Moorhead is out July 1st. You can pre-order it now. It's always good to pre-order. Make sure you're the first one in your neighborhood so that you can start the gossip and go, I got it. You don't. Nee, 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 nee. So everyone, keep up with Jennifer. Go to her website, jennifermoorhead.com. The link is in the show notes. I also want to thank our friends at Books Forward. You can go to booksforward.com, especially if you're a writer. But keep up with them. They're fun to follow even on social media. They're always promoting different books. And if you're like us who love to read, they're awesome to follow. And people can follow you on social media too, right, Jennifer?
Absolutely. Absolutely. On Instagram, it's at Jen Moorhead. It's Jen and then _ Moorhead. And then on Facebook, it's Jennifer Moorhead Author. So
awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. This was so much fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks. And be careful of barrels in the bayou.
Yeah, I will. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.